found this in Gunnerum. Gunnermir me.
What is it?
Well, it's
sick performance.
Welcome to Synthaholics, guys. This is your host, David Duncan, and with me is my co-host,
Aaron O'Brien.
Woo! And today we have a special guest with us, Robbie Palmer from Artful Geeks.
Artful Geeks? Artful Gremlins?
Artful Geek Gremlins! I'm contractually obligated to get everyone's thing wrong when I have them on my show.
Yeah. You took your two new friends, the Geekiverse and the Artful Gremlins. You just combined them.
I was like
an amalgamation of awesome. Now
I wanted to have one of them on tonight, and I couldn't.
Josiah.
Yeah. So Josiah, right, if you're listening to this, we're sorry you couldn't be here.
Yeah. What the heck?
The Geekiverse Gremlin Synthaholics, something like that. that's the new aggregate site that's coming out.
They should just put all the words together and make it spell something really weird.
Oh, man. It's like, instead of, like, I am Tom Riddle, I am Lord Voldemort. Like,
yeah,
I mean,
I don't have the brain power to put into it right now. So.
When you rearrange all the letters, it just shows up and says, look sharp, you dumbass.
Oh, it could be so many different weird things.
I love it.
Yeah.
That's a lot of letters. The Geekiverse, Artful Gremlins, and Synthaholics, so... So, yeah, guys, if you've got some good anagrams for us, you can email us at synthaholics@yahoo.com.
There you go. I'm sure they'll become flooding in.
Yes, because our email is always a steady stream of drips.
So we're deviating from our normal program this time around.
Yes, this is something that's been discussed. Me and Aaron have been talking about it, and... We kind of want to do, we want to try to grow the audience. I mean, that's one of the biggest things. And you guys have been amazing listening to us for a year and a half. And our audience has more or less stayed roughly the same over that time. And we want to try to expand that a little bit. So we're going to do once a month a non-Star Trek episode to see if that'll you know, help broaden the audience a little bit. And hopefully you guys won't mind. And if you hate it so much, maybe then you'll get us lots of emails.
Yeah. Hate mail.
Hate mail. Our very first hate mail.
I can tell you from experience, sometimes the hate mail is fun. You can have fun with hate mail. Oh,
and we do read it, and we do read them on the air. So, I mean, that's also something to look forward to.
With our crushing souls of the hate mail, we read that out.
When you hear me raise my voice, that means it was written in capitals.
Right, exactly. Yeah, so, but this episode, we're going to go into the Star Wars universe. Now, we've been to Star Wars before. We covered episode 7 when that came out, because, you know, we figured it was pretty...
Like you do.
Yeah, it's a pretty big milestone. We had to talk about it. But since Robbie here is more of a Star Wars fan, we thought we'd give him a subject he wanted to talk about, and we're jumping in at Star Wars Episode 1, The Phantom Menace.
And the grand plan is to do one Star Wars movie a month for the next 4 months, so that way we go in chronological order with Episode 1, 2, 3, and Rogue One as that comes out.
Now, you're going in, obviously, numerical order, not viewing order.
No, yes. Because the real viewing order is machete order, where you don't even watch Episode 1.
Exactly. The way I watch it is 4, 5, 2, 3, 6. Then, you know, 7.
Although, the fun thing about machete order is it makes the glaring issues with episode 3 and 6 even worse.
It does.
Leia's like, oh, I knew my mother. She was sad. Luke looked at her longer as she was dying than Leia did. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, how does Leia remember her real mom again? Like, and how are Natalie Portman's leg and knee so far down her body?
Like, oh, that's just biology.
In that tube?
That's just science.
Like, her waist is, like, right where that thing starts. That thing's, like, 3 foot long, and their knees are beneath that. Like, How did she get stretched out? Maybe that's why she's dying.
It's a possibility. I'm just going to use hand wavium and just say the Force, man.
Well, I heard a theory that Darth Sidious was like sucking the life force out of her and putting it in the
hand again. I've heard that theory. And actually, if you watch it, if you watch episode 3 again, with that in mind, the cuts between, they actually, that does translate. It does play. I'm not saying that that is the truth, but it does play that could be a real thing.
Yeah, but Robbie, the only thing is with that, and Dave, the only thing with that is that it's never explicitly said, and the frustrating thing is, if that is something that's happening, then why don't they just, like, come out and spell it? You know, like, just...
Oh, I agree with you. I completely agree with you.
Talking about not coming out and spelling things, that's going to be kind of the main focus of our episode one talk.
Yeah,
but before we get into that, I really wanted to, like, have each of us talk about how we first found Star Wars... And why did we love it so much before we go into talking about episode one? Because it's generally the not liked one, and we don't want to be the Star Trek podcast that hates Star Wars. We love Star Wars, but...
Yeah, that makes sense.
Star Wars is polarizing. A lot of people didn't like the prequel trilogies who were already in their adults as it came out. But children growing up loved it. So I think all of us are of the, you know, the adults that saw it as it came out.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah, I was definitely an adult when that came out, when the episode one came out, for sure.
Or old enough not to be a child and where you didn't like it. So, Robbie, you want to start with how you got introduced to Star Wars and why do you love it so much?
All right, I got introduced to Star Wars as a little kid. I watched a lot of those movies with my dad. We had them, you know, how you used to dub everything on VHSs when you rented them from the video store. I mean, we're going back a while here. To the days of, like, Pick-a-Flick, Blockbuster, and everything. So he had the original versions, you know, where Han shot first.
Mm-hmm. So the VHSs.
The VHSs, man. We went back. He even had the Betamax. I mean, wow. We're going back this hard, man. So my dad loved the Star Wars movies, and I grew up loving the Star Wars movies as well. And I still remember, I watched the hell out of 4 and 5, but I didn't watch Return of the Jedi all that much. And I remember specifically when I was a kid, I used to think that the title was Return of Jedi. And I couldn't understand who Jedi was.
That's funny.
And I'm looking at the box, I'm like, is that Jedi? Is that Jedi? No, that one's Jabba, but it's close. Is Jedi like that guy? I don't remember. But, you know, I just remember growing up with Luke Skywalker and Darth Vader. And, you know, James Earl Jones was a voice of my childhood, man. It's always been there for me. Exactly. So Star Wars to me has always been like a warm blanket. And I was 13 years old when episode one came out. So.
Nice.
And I'll leave that there, and we can go around the rest of the table, and I'll pick up my story in just a few minutes when we get on to episode one itself.
Great. Awesome.
How about you, Dave?
My dad was a big Trekkie. If you listen to all our episodes, you know that. My dad was big on the Trekkie. I wasn't shown Star Wars by my family. I found it through, like, kids at school. Like, they were reading Star Wars books. And I'm like, hey, that's kind of cool. Like, it's, like, in space. It's kind of like Star Trek because they're in space and they're fighting and doing stuff.
You got to sneak out of the house.
Yeah, I had to, like, sneak behind the house, like, go down to the dark alleys.
You watching the Star Wars behind my back?
Pretty much. I actually started reading the books. I read them reverse order. I read Return of the Jedi, Empire Strikes Back, and then A New Hope, and then I started reading The Expanded Universe. And
when your father found those books, did he cut a switch from the tree? And did he?
No, it wasn't like that. My dad just didn't like it, and he's just like, you know, like, well, how come? I was like, because I saw one on TV, and I was like, this is cool.
And I'm just hearing that really sad NBC, like, PSA music playing in my head right now. Who told you about this? Where'd you get this stuff? From you, Dad! I learned about it from watching you! That's just what I'm having in my head right now.
Yeah, so, well, that's Dave's life.
Yeah, it's pretty much...
That was Dave.
I wasn't able to watch The Simpsons.
Oh God!
Yeah, I was prohibited from that.
That's another thing, Robbie. He has no clue what the Simpsons are. Like, I make Simpsons jokes constantly.
They're like people with jaundice. Like, I think, I don't know.
Don't touch Willie. Good advice.
Yeah, hard. It's hard. It's hard knowing and then, Dave not knowing The Simpsons.
And then
oh god.
And then Aaron will say something about music, and I'll just default to Ice Ice Baby.
Nice.
Yeah, which is just infuriating.
So like my pop culture knowledge from my youth is very limited, because of things I was not allowed to watch. I wasn't not allowed to watch Star Trek. Star Wars. My dad just never brought it up. And so when I saw it on TV one day, I think it was Return of the Jedi. Is one of the first ones I saw on television. And I was like, Dad, how come you didn't tell me about this? He's like, I don't like Star Wars. I'm like, oh, okay, but it's cool. Why didn't you tell me? So I eventually, you know, got them. Yeah, I asked my parents or grandparents for the movies, and I got to see them, and they were great. I don't remember when the first time I saw them all the way through, but I read the Expanded Universe, and I read the Phantom Menace book before the movie came out. I did this for all the prequels.
What cover did you have?
Padme.
Obi-Wan for me.
Hardcover.
Hardcover. Well,
Dave, that being said, I mean, since you weren't part of the cultural phenomenon while just growing up, what drew you into that immediately? I mean, what was interesting to you when you first saw it, other than just it was like a space sci-fi thing?
Like, I love spaceships, and so I think one of the first scenes I remember seeing ever of Star Wars was the Return of the Jedi, like, indoor space battle scene where all the little ships are flying around, all the big ships. I just thought that was so cool how they were, like, fighter planes, and they were fighting each other. That really drew me in, but reading the books also drew me in. Like, I read the books in reverse trilogy order, and I've read, like, dozens and dozens of the Expanded Universe that me and my friends would all buy different ones, and we'd trade them with each other so we could read them. Like, basically, I didn't do comic books. I did Star Wars books, you know, as a kid. So, like, I read tons and tons of Star Wars. That was, like, my, nice. Comics without pictures. So that was my youth reading.
That's a side of you I never knew existed.
Yeah. You know they had Star Wars comics, too, right, bro?
I did not read the comics. I just the novels. Dozens and dozens of EU novels.
I know. Robbie, it's like he missed out all so much good
so
stuff.
So much, man. So much.
I had one season or 1 year of Spider-Man as a kid.
Yeah,
and it was through my school's book it program.
When you're talking about Star Wars, I mean, there was all these great comic books that were out.
There really is. Crimson Guard, Dark Empire, Shadows. I mean, come on, man. Crimson Guard alone was spectacular. The artwork in Dark Empire was amazing.
I had Shadows of the Empire, the novel, and then I bought the soundtrack for it, which was kind of interesting. They wrote a soundtrack for a book. I guess they used it in the video game,
too. All right, that's kind of cool. I didn't know that. That one you got.
Yeah, there was a soundtrack for it. I mean, I was that in the Star Wars. I bought, like, the behind-the-scenes book, like, all sorts of things. Like, I just, if it was a book in Star Wars, I would try to eat it up. I mean, as a kid, I was so proud of my bookshelf. I had Star Wars from one side to the other side. Star Wars everywhere. And my dad was like,
respect.
You need to, like, read, you know, nonfiction. You need to stop reading science fiction.
And the girls were somehow never impressed.
What girls?
You mean they didn't come over? They weren't impressed with your Padawan haircut?
Yeah.
No.
That got me all the ladies.
No, I didn't have a Padawan. We didn't know what Padawan was until episode one.
Yeah, exactly. And I was 13, and that got me all the ladies. I am lying to you. Yeah. I am lying to you right now.
So you're saying they're all pedophiles because they think Jake Lloyd was hot with that weird little rat tail.
Dude, that was Obi-Wan that was rocking the rat tail through the movie.
Oh, yeah. At the very end, Jake Lloyd had one.
Well, yes, that's true, at the very end. But to be honest, how many people made it to the very end? But we're bearing the
lead. I did so many times. As much as I didn't like the movie, I saw it like 6 or 7 times in the movie theater. I'm not even joking.
Wow, that's bad.
It is bad. I was like, what am I missing? But before we get into episode one, let's go back to Aaron. Aaron, where did you?
I actually saw New Hope in the theaters. And so yeah, lucky. I was very young. I was about 4 years old. I think it was during one of the re-releases because it came out in 77, and I'm pretty sure I was 4 when I went and saw it. It was around that time. Anyways, so it was just one of those things that when it came out, it just blew the doors off everything. Like nobody. Every kid in the neighborhood was just completely fascinated with Star Wars and everything about it. I mean, and then the action figures and all the toys came out that just compounded the insanity behind it. So it just grew and grew, and then Empire Strikes Back came out, and then that was just like, it blew everybody's mind. I mean, it was just so amazing.
Of course.
And of course, we're talking like 70s into the 80s, and we're all young kids, and there's no internet. I mean, there's only fan magazines that are out there. There's nothing to even go on, like the rumors. I mean, I remember the huge rumors about Boba Fett. Boba Fett, they just expounded on Boba Fett for like, I mean, just magazine articles and people writing fan fiction about Boba Fett and who he was and what he's about.
He nodded and said, like, two lines in Empire. That was it. It's just like, wow.
Yeah, it was but
the people, silent badass.
He was just, everyone was completely fascinated by him. And, I mean, just so it's the whole thing. So you got to kind of, like, go back to the day when all that stuff wasn't even, you know, like, we don't have the technology that we have today.
Did you see the Star Wars holiday special? Like, were you, like, did you stay up and watch that? Because I've not seen it, but I've heard Boba Fett's first appearance was...
It was a cartoon of him.
A cartoon of him.
It was animated.
And it's literally a terrible, terrible, awful, awful thing. I mean, there's a...
better or worse than the prequels?
Oh, dude, I would rather watch the Keeping Up with the Kardashians than watch that again, okay?
It's so bad.
It's awful.
It's so that came out. I don't know what year that came out, if that was like
a year before, if memory serves.
Year before Empire?
Year before Empire. Don't quote me on that, but I'm 90% sure it was the year before Empire.
Yeah, so I mean, at the time, of course, we were kids, so we didn't have a clue. So, I mean, it's just like, we didn't, like, have any, like...
It's more Star Wars, so it didn't matter what it was.
Yeah, I mean, we were also watching the old, like, you know, Godzilla movies and thinking they were, like, amazing. So, I mean, it was a totally different time for us, so...
It's 2016, and I still do that part.
No, but you know what I mean. But, so anyways, That being said, it just so the holiday special was just, I mean, you rewatch it now and just like, what is this piece of garbage?
Yep,
it's so bad. Yeah. So anyway, so that's where I grew up, and then obviously Jedi, and by the time Phantom Menace came out, I was in my mid-20s, and I when I saw it, I really wanted to make it as amazing as I hoped it could be. And it just didn't quite. And I'm a pretty, like, you know, like, I want things to be amazing. I want things to be, I try to take the best spin on it. And I just kept on like, yeah, but it had, and I'm like, but it didn't. It's just nothing seemed to work, you know? There were so much good parts to it, but they don't seem to, like, fit together.
I think that's kind of why I, like, watched it over and over again, because I was like, there's got to be something I'm missing. Why am I not liking this?
You were trying to immerse yourself so much in it that you convince yourself it's good. My wife did that with that band Bastille. She listened to one of their music videos so many times that she became convinced it was good. Truth be known, they're still terrible, but she's now convinced that song Laura Palmer is good and, in fact, ingenious, when in actuality, it's just bad. It's just really bad.
That's funny. That's funny. That's very funny.
And the thing is, like, I read the book, Episode 1, Phantom Menace, before it came out. Like, I read the book. I knew what was going to happen. And I was still disappointed by the film. Like the way I look at spoilers is like they're disappointment mitigation. I don't get people that want to avoid them. They just want to see things because, like, especially things that I love. If I love something so much, I'm going to build it up in my head. I'm going to build it. I'm going to build it. I'm going to build it. And then when I see it, and it doesn't even come close to what I was thinking, like, it ruins the movie for me. So, like, things that I care about a lot, like Star Wars and Star Trek, I usually try to find out anything I can about them because I don't want to be disappointed.
I get that.
Yeah.
And I knew what was going to happen, and I was still disappointed. Like, there was a pod race. Actually, the book actually opens with a pod race, I think. So
yeah,
you get to see the, because they mentioned that he wrecked one. And the first pod race was really cool. And, like, there's actually the books are way more violent. Like all the books were easily PG-13, if not R, as far as the content in them.
Especially Revenge of the Sith. Oh my god, that was bloody.
Attack of the Clones was. Like,
Attack of the Clones definitely was too. I was specifically referring to Anakin's attack on the Jedi Temple.
Oh, yeah. When he kills...
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
yeah, when he killed the younglings and everything like that. That was... To be inside his mind in that scene in the book. You know what I mean? That's what I'm referring to.
Well, the Tusken Raider attack that's alluded to in Attack of the Clones is a huge scene in the books. And that was, like, magnificently bloody and, like, just, like, almost... It's really scary. Abducting human women to breed with them or whatever the hell they were doing. I was like, what? So I mean, like, it was brutal, and it was like, wow, that's really cool. And, like, it wasn't, you know, a lot of the coolest stuff that from the books never made it into the films.
Well, come on, how much are they going to actually put all that in there?
Exactly. Yeah, it was a 2-hour toy commercial. That's all we got.
We want the Tusken Raider cutting off what's her face's Shimmy's husband's leg.
Dude, that movie premiered at Toys R Us press conferences, okay? That's where it was geared toward. That was the target demographic.
Which, I mean, part of me is like, yeah, it should be kind of geared to that demographic. I mean, I like, you know, violent movies and things like that, but there's a part of it's like, yeah, there's certain things that should be, like, for the kids as well as the adults, and it should have a crossover.
As much as I agree with you, you said the phrase right there perfectly. There should be a crossover. It shouldn't pander.
No,
because the first three movies did not pander. It told the story and it had that commercial ability, but it did not pander. It told the story and it dropped the mic.
Yeah.
Episode one specifically pandered.
Oh yeah, yeah. And I think they're trying so hard to push it to the kids, especially with Jar Jar Binks and stuff like that. It's just like,
I mean, heck, even the color of the starships in Naboo, you know, the design
the yellow,
and the color.
The yellow
and silver.
You
cannot tell me that was not a conscious decision to push that toy line.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. But the thing is, the whole problem with that movie completely attached to any of the characters.
Right.
Like, you can have the coolest spaceships, you can have the greatest looking robots and everything. Mm-hmm. It's like, Darth Maul's an awesome looking villain, but... You don't really care about anybody. That's,
right.
That's the biggest problem. I mean, when you watch, New Hope, I mean, you got, like, Luke, you're automatically identified with. Han Solo is just awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Chewbacca's a little bit hairy, but he's not bad.
Yep.
Yeah, he's like that guy. He's that goofy guy that you have. So.
Well, have you guys seen the Plinkett reviews, the Red Letter Media Plinkett reviews for episode 1, 2, and 3?
Of course. I don't know if I've watched all of them, but yeah. Well, I mean, I just get that they suck.
Specifically for episode 1, he points out there's no protagonist in the movie, and that, you know, the Jedi aren't really protagonists because you don't really care what they're doing, and Anakin can't be the protagonist because you don't meet him until 30 minutes into the film.
Protagonist?
Protagonist is what how Plinkett pronounced it. So
okay.
Protagonist.
I'm like, wait, what now?
The protagonist.
What's happening?
Protagonist is the actual word. Protagonist is how Plinkett says it. So.
Gotcha. I was wondering, what fresh hell is this? What's happening to me? Did I have a stroke?
I thought it was some Star Wars thing that it was like, is this like, you know, part of the guild, you know, that's... I was like, I don't know what you're talking about.
No, it's the Plinkett review. I actually rewatched all three Star Wars movies, Plinkett reviews, just recently. And that part always really strikes out to me, whereas the beginning, the protagonist. And I was watching Star Wars Episode 1 with the commentary on to prepare for this episode. And
I couldn't bring myself to do that part. I didn't watch it with commentary.
I watched it with commentary, so I didn't have to hear what was happening in the original thing. And George Lucas says Padme is the protagonist of The Phantom Menace.
Then he doesn't know how to write.
Obviously.
He said she was, and I'm like, huh. I'm like, I guess, sort of, kind of, because, like, it's all about her. They're following her around the entire film, except for the parts where she's following them around just to keep being in the film.
Yeah.
But, like, she has got no agency over anything. Like, mm-hmm. most of the time, she's, like, posing as a servant. So mm-hmm. she has no agency or ability to affect anything. Which is really bizarre that she would be, like, the main character, especially since she doesn't really have any really big hero moments in the film at all.
Now, the problem that I have, and I understand what George Lucas may have thought he wanted out of it, but he didn't create an absolute protagonist in, excuse me, protagonist. In this movie, specifically in Phantom Menace, it was a jumbled mess of narratives. Now, if you wanted a cohesive, precise story, what he should have done is followed Obi-Wan Kenobi. It should have been his story and his trilogy.
That should have been told from
his point of view. Because you have the Skywalker story being told through Luke, where Obi-Wan Kenobi is the usher into this new age of Skywalker, Luke having to face his father. But now to go back to the beginning and to see the Clone Wars, although to be honest, let's just call it the Clone Battle, because that's all we really saw. You know, and then to see the rise of Anakin and then the fall of Anakin and then the re-rise of Vader, it should have been Obi-Wan's story.
Like, my feeling is episode 1 should have been the footnote, like the scroll for episode 2. Episode 2 should have been episode 1. Episode 3 should have been episode 2. And episode 3 should have been Darth Vader kicking everyone's ass all the time. That's what I wanted. I wanted to see Darth Vader be a badass. I wanted to see why people shook in their boots for the mention, the mere mention of Darth Vader's name. Right, and I know we're just talking about episode 1 now, but just so I can finish my thought, the only thing badass he did as Vader was kill a bunch of children. Wow, that's got to be real hard if you're an adult with a laser sword, a lightsaber, sorry. But George Lucas always calls it laser sword, so I heard it way many times in the commentary.
Right.
With a lightsaber, like fighting children who probably don't even have their own, they just use training ones. Yeah, that's badass. You killed a bunch of kids, whatever. And then he went to Mustafar, and he killed a bunch of unarmed Nemoidians. Still, true. not seeing the badass that makes people quake. I mean, I guess you know you could just be random anyone. Darth Vader will come in and kill you, but it's not like that. Doesn't seem badass to me. It just seems like he just killed a bunch of defenseless people twice.
Right. No, I understand what you're saying. I mean, specifically speaking in the prequel movies. But I don't know.
That's why I wanted episode 3 to be Darth Vader kicking everyone's ass. I wanted to see why people were scared of him.
My issue is that, you know, with episode 1 was this. It's a great idea, and the world that he built is pretty decent. It's just that all the characters, the whole flow of the story, that nothing really gets put together. I mean, it's like all these jigsaw pieces that just don't quite click together. You know?
I agree. I completely agree. Like George, I mean, up to and including, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I just wanted to say this part specifically, all these jigsaw pieces that don't quite fit. To me, the most glaring one right off the bat is the inclusion of the planet Naboo.
Yeah.
Because to me, personally, I think it would have been far more poetic if that planet was actually Alderaan. That way you care more when you rewatch New Hope and Alderaan is destroyed. You know what I mean?
That's a great point.
That's a really good point.
Yeah. So I don't understand the inclusion of a planet that is completely brand new and then you never see Alderaan again. I just don't understand the logic behind that.
Yeah, Robbie, that's a good idea. And, I mean, I wish that Lucas was taking notes from you.
Thank you.
Well, the thing is with George Lucas, he came up with great ideas, great story. You know, if you look at the thing overall, like, you know, as a story, it's decent overall. And that's part of the problem with his process is that he's trying to tell a 6-part story, but like he told the last half and he's got to figure out how to make the first half work. And right. I don't think he tried very hard. George Lucas has great ideas, but he's not great at putting pen to paper. Like, I mean, we've even said this about Gene Roddenberry in Star Trek. Like, he's got great ideas, but putting pen to paper, not always the best when it comes to the subject matter that he created.
Right.
Like, and the best of the original series, I mean, the original trilogy was Empire and Return, where he pitched the ideas and had professional writers who could write them down, and, like, script writers write scripts, which is what he should have done. And so that way he could have some kind of quality control. But in the prequels, he was surrounded by yes-men, and there was no one challenging anything he said. Like, if you watch the behind-the-scenes stuff of Phantom Menace, you see Rick McCollum, the producer, like the person just under George Lucas. He's got his hand on his face, and he looks horrified at the first viewing of the Phantom Menace. Like,
as well he should. And as well he should.
And even George Lucas was like, yeah, there's no way we can really fix it at this point.
Yes, if you and watched. You know what? To say that this movie is that much of a cinema abortion is, on one hand, it's fair. But on the other hand, it's a touch unfair because there are glimmers. I mean, they're just moments and they're only shadows, but there are glimmers of genius that movie. The problem is he doesn't capitalize on any of them and he doesn't focus on any of them.
Give me an example of what you see as amazing.
One example that I see as amazing is right from The Phantom Menace, you start to see the code of Bane, of Darth Bane, okay? The fact that there are only two Sith at any given time. You're seeing Darth Sidious from behind the scenes, who let's be honest, we all knew that he was going to end up being the Emperor. We all knew that it was Palpatine right from the word get-go, at least all of us that have seen the other movies. Then you see Darth Maul there, okay? You see this scary guy, and I'm one in the camp where even when he took the hood off and you saw the crown of spikes, you know, he still was ominous and he was still scary. His fighting style was animalistic and it was acrobatic. I thought he was awesome. Now, the problem is they killed him off right away. I do know in the extended universe, you know, Star Wars, what is it, Rebels or Clone Wars?
Rebels and Clone Wars, both he comes back.
He is in both of them.
And they are canon. They are not EU.
True.
He is alive.
However, they came back so much later, and he's not featured in any other of the films up to this point.
Sure. He's dead as far as canon's concerned at this point, but
right.
As a whole, it's not.
But to get rid of him in the trilogy series, to get rid of him in that battle after killing Qui-Gon Jinn. Now, granted, I realize they did not follow Obi-Wan and make that his story, but that would have been the perfect way to make this a personal story for Obi-Wan, create agency, give this overarching menace that it was lacking through the entirety of the prequels, because you got rid of such an interesting villain that could have given such raw emotional, I don't know, feeling to our main protagonists. And it doesn't even just have to be Obi-Wan, too. It could have been Queen Amidala, a.k.a. Padme. It could have been Anakin, because he had ties to Qui-Gon as well. You know, I mean, you could have had such motivation coming from all of the main protagonists that you decide to follow throughout the entirety of the prequel trilogy, and yet you drop the ball by getting rid of him in the original, in the prequel trilogy.
Yeah, the first one. Yeah, you just get him out of the way immediately.
Huge crime. Yep.
Right. Now, the genius to me was the inclusion of Darth Maul, because I thought that he was a very interesting, very cool character, and I thought that his acrobatics were very compelling on screen. That was one. And two, it was a very interesting way to start sprinkling in Sith lore, because that's something that you really haven't seen very much of. You know, you've heard Vader and the Emperor talking about the dark side in the original movies, but you don't really know much about their history up to this point. Mm. Now, keep in mind, we're talking about this movie, almost 20 years after it's come out, too. You know, it's been almost 20 years since Phantom Menace dropped. So, I mean, we're looking at it with so much more canon and history and knowledge. But if you look back at it, that really was the beginning of the Sith lore that has remained canon, because Disney stripped away everything else.
Yeah, because Disney got rid of the EU. But right. What I wanted to kind of focus this the rest of this around is Jar Jar. And you'll see why in a minute if you think I'm crazy that I want to focus the discussion around.
Oh, I saved that one for you. I was trying to tap dance around it, but I was saving that one for you, David.
Thank you, because I made everyone here watch a 47-minute-long video, which I have watched about three times today, about Jar Jar Binks being a Sith Lord.
You gotta do something else with your time, David.
Yeah, I know. I know Robbie's trying to get me to watch Luke Cage, which I'm going to. I'm definitely going to. I just
oh, dude, it's so good. It is so good, man.
But Jar Jar, what did you immediately think of Jar Jar? The two of you.
Oh, it's complete garbage.
Bring me his head.
Yeah, it's the worst. It's
awful.
It seems slightly racist. It's a little just, it's trying to be comical when it's not.
It's the humble servant.
Yeah.
That is a phenomenal impression. That is the best one I have ever heard in my life. Seriously.
Demanded by the Gantletus.
Yeah, he's pretty good.
I said it was a good compliment, but also keep in mind what we said about Jar Jar. I wouldn't recommend keeping that shit up, yo.
It's a puppet. He's a Dark Lord of the Sith. What's you talking about? Yeah. But
so go into the theory, Dave.
This guy on Reddit, Lumpowaru, came up with an interesting theory that Jar Jar is actually a Sith Lord. And a guy, Loxton, his channel's like Noggin Loxton. Great, I'll link it in the show notes so you can see this for yourselves. He does a lot of like video game theories, but he did this Jar Jar. He expanded upon the idea, and it's amazing. The original theory just kind of looked at how Jar Jar acts in the movie, how he's clumsy and he's like falling over, and they liken this to like drunken fist fighting. And he centers himself like a wushu drunken fist person does before he does this crazy jump into the lake.
Right.
Apparently that's an actual martial arts
work. It is an actual martial art, yes. The whole idea is to discombobulate and disorientate your opponent by making them think that you're either intoxicated or in some other way incapacitated, and then springing in for the attack.
Right.
And then they show video of the guy doing this drunken fist, like training videos, and they put it next to Jar Jar. And like a lot of his moves are really consistent. Also, they show some scenes where Jar Jar is standing in the background and people are having dialogue, and he's moving his mouth in a weird way. And they're saying he's using the Force to implant words, like he's using the Jedi mind trick, but very subtly in the background. This happens in two scenes, both on Tatooine, where he's standing behind Captain Panaka talking to Obi-Wan to get Padme to go with them, and then another time he's speaking through Padme saying, "I don't approve of you trying to get this boy involved with us."
Right.
Right, right,
So, I mean, that's really convincing, but Loxton, he did this amazing job of, like, actually diving even deeper into the lore where George Lucas gets his inspiration from. And Binks is a character in Piers Anthony series, which I can't remember the name of it off the top of my head.
It's Xander, isn't it?
That's Xander.
Or that's a land that it's called. I forgot. I've read
Xanth. I'm sorry. It's Xanth.
Yes.
And there's a character named Bink in it who has a new kind, like it's a series based in magic. And Bink, he's thought he didn't have any magic, but it turns out his magic ability is like just basically just crazy luck, which Jar Jar seems to have, like fighting the robot army in the most dumbest ways possible. But he's always like striking fatal blows on anything that comes near him. And then also
precisely dodging gunfire and having the droid shoot the droid right across the way.
Yeah. And then also Asimov, you know, one of the greatest science fiction writers ever, in his book, The Mule, there's a clumsy idiot who basically creates the Civil War so he can rise to become the leader of an empire. Like, in those couple words, does that seem like anything in Star Wars? Yes. Like, I mean, having him in the background, like this, if this was true, and I think it is, based on Alec Med Best, he said that the guy who played Jar Jar, he says, you know, it's great when people finally learn the truth of things, hashtag the Phantom Menace.
And also, two quotes directly from George Lucas, one of them being,
Jar Jar
is the key to all this.
Yes.
And the second one saying that the prequels should have parity with the original trilogy. And you meet a character by the side of the road, and he followed the hero's journey throughout the original trilogy.
Yes.
And meeting that creature by the side of the road, which inevitably ends up being the grand wizard that teaches you everything that you need to know, you have parity, you've got the good wizard, immediately you're going to have the exact same situation and find the dark wizard.
Yes. Right.
Which would be who?
Yeah, which would be obviously Jar Jar. But the issue I have with it is that, first of all, why did you make the granddaddy of the bad, you know, big bad of Star Wars be such a goofy-looking character? Like, there's no way you could even translate Jar Jar into something evil. It just, I mean, you could make him look like maybe like a little scary, but not really. He's too weird of a character.
I mean, the problem with that, I honestly think, comes down to the filters
and the tone of the film itself. He made it too childish, and then and because of that, you will always read him as childish. Whereas if he used a different tone, a different filter, different screens and whatnot, made it look closer to even what we see in The Force Awakens, I honestly don't think you'd be able to say that statement with as much fervor. Truthfully, I think it all came down to the composition and the voice with that.
I mean, and the next thing I'm just going to throw out there,
yeah.
And I saw the, you know, obviously I watched the video, and I think there's a lot of good points to it, and it might be possibly true. So, Phantom Menace comes out, everyone pans it, they hate Jar Jar, right? And I mean, that's pretty universal. Nobody, there's not very, very, very few people actually said they like Jar Jar Binks, but if he was the key to the whole thing, why didn't George Lucas say, you know what, screw them, they're going to get the rest of the story, and they're going to get blown away because they won't even expect it coming because they hate this guy so much? You know, like, why didn't he stick to his guns and his original idea? I mean, that's even more, like, bewildering.
Also, watching the commentary, George Lucas said the midi-chlorians were an original idea back on episode 4. He just never had a chance to, like, you know, say anything about it. So,
and that's bullshit.
We'll get to the midi-chlorians before we end this episode, because I need to rant about that.
Yes. Yeah. We
the midi-chlorians. We will definitely rant about that.
But I do understand, like, why didn't George Lucas stick to his guns? But I think, you know, I think George Lucas is a very vain person, from what I gather, watching, listening to the commentary, watching him on the deleted scenes, but the behind the scenes stuff. I believe he's, I mean, people are a very vain individual, and he, you know, on the set of episode one, he's like, man, we're never going to be Titanic. He's always trying to beat out other directors who, like, make movies that make a lot of money. He's, like, always clawing for James Cameron.
Yeah.
So, like, I mean, his ego and stuff is on the line, and he's like, well, instead of blowing us away, my belief is that he was like, crap, you know, as much as I want to tell it this way, I have to give in a little bit to the fans so that they'll come back. So they'll come back and watch 2 and 3.
He was thin-skinned. He didn't stand by his vision. He didn't stand by what he wanted to do. And that's, you know, we're also holding the fact that, for the sake of this conversation, that this theory is true.
Right. No, yeah. If it is true.
There's so much good evidence. and George Lucas said, and, you know, other people have said, episode 2, and I mean, I remember reading this in, like, you know, the early websites and the magazines at the time, that, like, episode 2 was going to be completely different because of all the hate that Jar Jar got.
Yep, so, I mean, I remember,
like,
that too.
So, I mean, like, this is, like, I think, I mean, like, this is a great theory, and because it's been so long, people maybe forget that there was all these, you know, rumblings of changes happening because of the hit of Jar Jar. But, I mean, like, I personally believe this is true, and I think it's great that someone, you know, visualized this, and I think it's great that Loxton came in and, like, did an even deeper dive into this theory, because I believe it's true, because it just makes sense.
I'm going to just play it. I mean, I do think there is some validity to this theory, but I'm going to play a little devil's advocate here. I think in anything with especially a huge cultural impact, a lot of people will start reading into things. I mean, you can go to, like, the Kennedy assassination or the Apollo moon landing, and there's lots of people who say, like, they have lots of conspiracy theories, okay?
Sure,
right.
So I think that's very possible, that people obviously obsess over things. They watch it, or they study all the little things about that subject, and then they find things that to kind of fill in the holes. That all being said, I just really believe if Jar Jar was supposed to be that big of an important character, it just seems like the stupidest idea just to back away from him.
As much as I agree with you, considering George Lucas really only had the merchandising rights for these movies, and it's no secret he basically made these movies to be giant toy commercials. If nobody goes to see them and nobody buys the toys, then he loses all this money. You know what I mean? So, as much as I do see what you're saying, I also don't think he's a man of integrity in his vision. I think he's a man of bottom dollars.
Yeah,
I think he's scared.
Like I said, he's always trying to beat James Cameron. Like, Star Wars was the biggest movie ever, and then Titanic came out, and Titanic ruined his number one movie. And so, in at the time of episode one, he's like, "Man, I've got to beat James Cameron. I got to beat him because he beat me, so I've got to beat him back." And he just couldn't do it. And he thought if he threw all his money into digital effects, and he says digital effects and in a computer so many times in the commentary. I was surprised that a couple times they said things were real. I was like, really? That's real? I was kind of blown away by a couple of things that were real.
I know, because this whole movie, it looks like it's just like a cartoon. I mean,
yeah, it does.
He actually had miniatures, like the bongo going through the water. All the stalactites and stuff is miniatures. I'm like, what? They just computer edited their own miniatures? And like, you know, the Gungan fight, like that field or whatever, it's just, they just shot a whole bunch of footage on a blank open field and they just put in CG characters all over to the top of it. Miniatures.
It still looks like a big cartoon.
It does.
It does. Completely.
And that's why I was blown away when they said things were real. I'm like, what? How is this real? It looks just as fake as everything else.
Yeah, yeah. No,
what the fuck is up with the Toydarians?
I don't know. And if they are immune to mind tricks, why doesn't the Jedi know this before he starts waving his hand around?
Blue bug thing with a flaccid penis on its face. And why weren't they being used by the Separatists during the Clone War?
Also,
Because they're so disagreeable, nobody wants to work with them.
Also, why would a trade federation trying to be blocking trade to a planet? Shouldn't they be encouraging trade to a planet?
Well, that's a whole other thing. It's a whole other side of it. Is the plot, the political plot behind everything is just as clear as mud, and you're just like, okay, just there's some shit going on that we're not really supposed to really understand, right?
And
so,
and one of the things we said earlier is that this movie panders to children, and one of the things Plinkett points out so many times in the Plinkett reviews for the movies is like, all this boring political stuff, and this movie's supposed to be made for children, and like, there's so many boring scenes of just like political
intergalactic trade law
that makes no sense at all.
Right.
I'm just like,
not only does it not make sense, nobody cares. You know, it's like, come on, you know.
Oh, what's the matter, Aaron? You don't care about the intricacies of intergalactic trade law?
Not in this, no.
I'm right there with you, buddy. I'm right there with you.
But I just
dropped a few lines and just let you know that there's some problem someplace out in space and nobody, you know, the politicians don't like it. I mean, come on.
But I mean, the plan.
Exactly. I think that whole thing could have been summed up with the phrase, bitch, better give me my money. Okay? And then boom, drop the mic, get out of there. Let's get more movie.
But the whole thing is just like, it's all it is political maneuvering by Palpatine to get power, and just like, how can you really see that far ahead in such a confusing, convoluted method of doing things? Like, things had to go exactly right in the wrong ways to get to have the power that he wanted. Like, how did he know everything was going to fall into place?
I don't know. Paul Atreides could have done it.
I don't know.
It's Paul Atreides. I like that. Wow.
But, cool. So, Aaron, you're skeptical about the Jar Jar thing. I believe it to be canon. And the thing is, like, the next two movies don't negate it to be canon. They just don't. They just don't reveal it.
It's, you know what it is. I think there's some very good points. Like the especially the parts where you see Jar Jar mouthing the words, you know, with some of the other side characters in Padme as well. I mean, that really is like, why did they put that in there? That doesn't.
And nothing is done by accident. He's completely digital. And also the part where he does they claim he does a force jump, and a robot shoots at him, and you see the robot's head track. The robot's also completely digital.
Right.
That was a little bit of a stretch. I mean, I'm not saying I don't agree with it, but I was like, that's like, why wouldn't they show more of that then, if that was the case? Or at least allude to something. You know,
like, if they had Jar Jar call up Palpatine in the... you know, on the ship to alert Darth Maul to being there, or if they had just a cloaked figure to have some kind of like mystery or something into it, that would have been cool. Then you know, you don't have to see it's Jar Jar. There's someone in a cloak. Like, who could that be? Like, don't show his hands. Just show like a cloak looking at a computer, And, like, you know, the other person on the other side is like, okay, we'll be sitting Darth Maul. Like, what? Like, that, just something little like that could have, like, been like, who is it? Who is it? And then it could have been seeds. And episode 2 and 3 could have been so much better if they had things
like that. And I agree, when Dooku came onto the scene, you're like, where the hell did this guy come from?
Yeah, he just kind of appears out of nowhere. And,
you know,
now, don't get me wrong, I love Christopher Lee, but I'm like,
I love Christopher Lee?
Really? Out of nowhere?
With no backstory, not even in the books. Like, right? Nothing. Like, he just came out of nowhere because, you know, that's another thing that also is proof in Loxton's video that he believes is proof, is that his character came out of nowhere, probably because they changed or removed Jar Jar Binks from so many of the scenes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, there's so many things that make this seem like it should have been true.
Not only does he come out of nowhere, I've watched Attack of the Clones at least 10 to 12 times, and I still don't understand his story. Yeah. It really feels like they just wrote words.
Like, he was the
like,
master?
Like, not words that make sense, they're just right. Like,
master. Yeah. He was the master of Qui-Jet.
Handle.
He was
just
the
like, yeah, the we're just going to write
Qui-Jet,
words.
Qui-Gon. And then he was hinting that Qui-Gon was a Sith too, like, the entire time. Yeah. I'm like,
who was hinting at that too?
I was like,
who was saying that?
Count Dooku. Count
Dooku.
Whenever
he
Obi-Wan was
to the fact that that Qui-Gon was a Sith,
because he trained Obi-Wan and he was a Sith himself. So like he's like he was a Jedi posing as a Sith, and like it was just like what?
Yeah. I'm surprised nobody brings this up anymore as a problem with the Phantom Menace. Anybody else remember in episode 5 how Obi-Wan says, go and learn from Yoda, the Jedi Master who trained me?
Oh, yes!
And you find out that Qui-Gon trained Obi-Wan? It's like, hey, how about sticking with your own continuity, you douche?
Well, maybe he kind of like meant him. Like, he was like one of the...
He trained him as a child whenever they were doing lightsaber practice.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Bit of a stretch.
I agree.
It's definitely a stretch, but it's just the only thing that makes sense, and it's still not that great.
Right. Yeah, but that all being said, this is just I think that the Jar Jar Binks idea behind it is great. I think there's so much there to be uncovered, and if that was George Lucas's original idea, you know, he just should have just like.
I wish he would have stuck to his guns and been like a big F you to the fans if you don't like Jar Jar, because he loved Jar Jar.
Yeah,
he thought he was great, and he's the key to all this, and it's so disappointing that his vision, because he's got great vision. Like, broad strokes, his vision is amazing. It's just the nitty-gritty. Like, he can't put pen to paper as far as, like, dialogue goes, but his broad strokes are beautiful. And if you could just do that.
Just going along with that, I mean, I think it's like if you could marry someone like J.J. Abrams in with George Lucas in a room, I think you'd have, like, an amazing... Because J.J. is great for character development and making you actually care about the characters and wanna see what happens with them. He just doesn't know how to, you know, wrap up a story or keep a plot line going.
I just don't like J.J. Abrams' just fascination with the mystery. I hate his mystery box. Because, I mean, we talked about Star Trek in the Darkness, and making Khan a mystery was stupid. I'm not crazy about Finn and Rey also being a mystery. Like, George Lucas, I mean, like, in Star Wars, I mean, Luke wasn't a mystery. It's like Luke Skywalker, and then like, you know his first and last name, the very beginning of the he's being raised by his aunt and uncle. You know kind of who he is, and you identify with him, and he wants to go off and follow his dreams, and he's been like told, no, you can't, you need to help me and around the house for a little while. Right. Yeah. And then you get the big reveal that Darth Vader's his father in the second movie. It's like, oh wow, I wouldn't see that coming out of nowhere. But the problem with J.J. Abrams is that we've got episode 7 and the main two characters, we don't know a thing about them. Even after the entire movie's over, we know nothing about them.
Right.
Like we
main three. Main considering Poe, Rey, and Finn.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, Poe's supposed to be pretty big too.
Well, Well, Poe was also supposed to be originally killed off in the middle of it, but
true.
So, but Poe, I don't really care so much. He's an Alliance pilot. Fine, whatever. Poe Dameron. We know his first and last name. That's fine. And they're true. Using comics to, you know, to kind of flesh out his like origin story, which is fine.
That's true.
But we know nothing about Rey and Finn, and we will not know anything about Rey and Finn until the next movie, and we won't know anything important that happens in between episodes 6 and 7 until episode 9 is out. Because now,
did you guys hear that culture. Rumor? Did you guys hear that rumor that there was a Finn toy that was up on Amazon for literally like 6 hours, and the name on there was Finn Calrissian?
Hmm.
It actually had the last name on there, and then they immediately yanked it down after about 6 hours.
Wow.
No, that was a rumor. I never actually saw it, and I never saw any screen caps of it. But it also kind of pissed me off. If it was fake, it's kind of annoying to me. But if it's true, then are you trying to tell us that there's only like one black family in all of this fucking galaxy?
Mace Windu.
Like, seriously?
There's two, sort of. Mace Windu had parents, probably.
That's right.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That's true.
Well, I've heard rumors that maybe Finn might be Mace Windu's child so that he could be, you know, a Force
user.
Oh,
sweet Christmas. Okay.
And so he could be a Force user. So, I mean, that might be interesting. I mean, he did wield the lightsaber, but that doesn't mean he can use the Force. It just means he picked up a thing that could hurt someone and tried to swing it at another
person.
I'm
down with him being a Jedi. I want my Finn to be a Jedi. That's what I want.
Yeah, I do too. I agree with that too. But here's my beef with all that stuff is that it's a gigantic universe. Why can't they just be two, like, weird people that came out of the woodwork? And we don't know anything about them, and we're going to follow their story and get all their backstory. But they're not related to Luke or Lando or, you know, Mace Windu. They're just a bunch of slobs that just found their way into this adventure. You know,
see, I would love that. That. I would absolutely love that.
That would have been absolutely fine. But because their last names are secret, they're got to be related to somebody, and they make this huge mystery thing, and there's like a bajillion theories online about who Rey is, who Snoke is, who... And it's just like, all you got to do is just say... Snoke is, you know, Snoke something, and then they make, oh, okay, maybe he's definitely a new character. Rey something, oh, well, maybe she's a new character. Or Rey Skywalker, or Rey Organa, or Rey Solo, it doesn't matter. I don't
Rey Palpatine.
Or Rey Palpatine, which is another fantastic theory that I
loved that theory.
I love that theory. We're talking theories all over this place. So
right,
look these up. The ones that we said are great. They're a lot of fun to read about or listen to because they're. Stuff all over YouTube.
Yeah, well, I mean, but just going back to episode 7 and, like, not knowing anything about him, I mean, essentially, this is kind of the blackout you had when I was younger. Like, you just, there was nothing. There was nothing you would know until the next movie. I mean, you might have got at least little breadcrumbs, but they might have, you know, people read too far into them and it meant nothing. Like, say, like, a way somebody said something, just an inflection on a voice, and they'd be like, did you see how he said that word? Well, that meant this. And you're just like, oh.
Yeah, you're reading into it, but
and then later on, you're thinking it was just
no,
just how the act over the line. Yeah, you know, I mean, just you can just go down these rabbit holes forever. You know, I mean,
sure.
And you know what? Honestly, that's kind of the fun with the fandom.
Yeah, because, yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, I'm a huge fan of the Dark Souls series for the PlayStation and whatnot, and that to me is actually the funnest part of those games is the lore itself and the community that it breeds. That we all just come together and discuss the lore. Well, the inflection was on this, so I think it means this, or this did this, so this means this.
Right.
And that's another thing that I love about Star Wars. You know, is there's just so much lore, especially now that Disney cut so much of the extended universe, there is now so much more speculation that you can do. Because you no longer have Dark Empire as canon. You no longer have Shadows as canon. You don't have Death of Chewbacca as canon. You know, now you can.
I want to see Chewbacca
so
hug a moon.
Places. Oh yeah, dude, me too. More of that, less of everything else.
I'm going to hug that moon as it comes down at me. Yeah, a lot of people didn't like the death of Chewbacca. I was like, eh, that's fine. It makes it shakes up the Han Solo character a lot.
It really does.
Although they did the opposite with Episode 7, they killed Han Solo and left Chewbacca alive.
But you know what? Harrison Ford has been lobbying for that ever since
Empire. Yeah. So I mean, the thing that like people like drove me nuts about like is I mentioned this all with spoilers. Like, there's people like, oh, if you spoil Episode 7 for like on Facebook, if you spoil Episode 7 for me, where I'm gonna unfriend you, like stuff like that. I'm like, there's nothing to spoil in episode 7 because it was a play-by-play of episode 4. And if you knew anything about Harrison Ford at all, as far as his relationship with Star Wars, you knew he was going to be the one to die.
Am I the only person that feels that Harrison Ford just doesn't want to act in anything? Like, if he could just get away from the whole thing, he would just, like, live on his private island, and that would be it.
Except for Indiana Jones. He wants to do those.
Millennium
Chewbacca.
I mean, you've seen him in... like, interviews, like, on, like, you know, on late-night TV, and, like, he really doesn't want to even be there. Like, it's just like, get me out of this place. I hate all of you. I just always get that feeling from him.
I do, too, dude. I do, too.
And yeah. I love him, but...
How can you not?
Yeah. But, I mean, it's just like, I just don't want to do anything.
You know, there's something magnetic about that devil-may-care attitude that he's been giving. You know, I don't know. It actually kind of makes me like him more.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. That's great.
He definitely has a charisma about him that carries through even in his nonchalant, yeah. I don't give a crap about anything.
For sure.
But it's just really weird. But, I mean, like... It's just there was no surprises in episode 7. Like we still don't even know anything about the two main characters. So I mean, like there was literally no surprises at all in the entire film.
Well, they had to set everybody up.
Oh, I'm just hoping that episode 8 is going to be so much better. I'm just hoping.
I don't think you need to worry about that at all because now we've been introduced to our new characters. Now we have rectified some of our old ones. Now everybody's reintroduced. Now they can go forward with the story.
I'm worried about Rian Johnson,
though. I understand what you're saying.
I'm worried about Rian Johnson, though.
I don't know. I think you may be worried for no reason, to be very honest with you.
Looper's the only movie I've seen of his. And in the movie about time travel, they make fun of time travel and time travel mechanics in the movie.
Uh-huh.
So to me, like, they're not even taking the In the movie, in the canon of the movie, they're not even taking it seriously. Like, they're not even trying to explain it in a way that's meaningful or makes sense. And the whole point behind Looper was they were trying to prevent the horrible world that was going to happen. And at the very end, they didn't. Like, they just, like, that was the whole, everything was leading up to it, and nothing's going to change. This is like, what was the whole point of the movie, then?
It's all time travel. I mean, in 12 Monkeys, I mean, it's the same idea.
Well, I mean...
Yeah, it is.
But they just...
I mean, a little different, but...
But 12 Monkeys, they weren't making fun of the time travel angle, too. Like, they were just...
Well, yeah, they did. I mean, he showed up, he was in World War I and, like, you know, in some crazy battle, and he was like... that's a totally Terry Gilliam kind of thing. Just throw him in some weird, you know, atmosphere, and then he's back to his original, you know, mission. You know, had nothing to do with anything.
Well, yeah, but, like, the gang, there was it doesn't make any sense.
Nah, I don't know. It's like Life of Brian when he goes flying along with the aliens in the middle of the story. It has nothing to do with anything. Who knows why they threw that in there?
I don't know. I mean, like, I don't know. I was just disappointed by Looper. I was really, really wanting to like it. And then at the end, it was like, wow, that's not surprising at all. You did exactly what I was scared you were going to do, and I was upset by it. I don't know.
At least it wasn't Bruce Willis surrogates.
Could have been.
No matter how deep you go, there is always another level.
Yeah.
Unless you're the Phantom Menace.
It's surface level.
So notice shallow.
Notice we've stopped talking about Phantom Menace.
Yeah, we need to go back to that because I haven't even made fun of Boss Nass yet. Boss Nass.
Yeah, he's terrible,
too. Seriously, come on.
Yeah, he's
a bombad general.
Terrible. I mean, just terrible. I mean, there's just nothing even good to say about it. I mean, the Gungans are, like, I don't even understand. Like, so there's the Jar Jar Binks type of character, and then you have the Boss Nass, who doesn't look anything like any of the Jar Jar Binks, you know, tall, goofy-looking characters. So what's up with that? That doesn't even make any sense. So
not at all. Like, he's got a completely different pigment, which, you know, speaking from the Animal Kingdom perspective, would make sense if he was a different gender.
Right.
But
he's the third gender.
He could be.
You know what? That is thinking about things very...
Co-janitor.
The co-janitor. Yeah, the co-janitor. He's like the only one, so he gets to sleep with everybody.
I literally just listened to that episode a couple of days ago.
Which is
you did?
Yeah, the one where you were the co-janitor. Well, I actually said the co-janitor, but fair enough. I literally just listened to that episode a couple of days ago. That was funny. Like, yes, I can join in the reference game now.
Yes, that's awesome. God. That's awesome.
I'm surprised you actually listened to that. That's funny.
We recorded that around.
I'm surprised when anybody listens to anything. So.
No, you guys have a good show. It's fun. It's very fun.
Thank you.
Is it still fun being on the show, though? Or did it discreetly ruin it?
Dude, yes. It's definitely still fun being on the show. I feel bad. Usually I'm a lot more loud and vocal and everything, but I'm also sick right now. So I'm trying to conserve some energy.
I've also got a head cold, too. So we're powering through because we love you guys, the listeners.
Absolutely. I'm over here with the Black Plague for you people.
Yeah. I've had a head cold forever, and it just doesn't want to go away.
Ugh. So, I'm so sorry, dude.
It's great. But anyways, Boss Nass.
Maybe he's the co-janitor. He's like one of like 100,000. That's why he's the boss. He gets to sleep with everybody. They bring him the food. He gets fat. He doesn't look like a Gungan anymore.
I like that idea. That's a fun idea. Other thing is Queen Amidala, she runs, so basically the queen is elected.
I think it is. Since they're 14, I think it's like their high school or like middle school. I don't know what kind of school are you in? Junior high? When you're 14, it's like their science fair. Like if they like make a really good proposal, like they get voted on, and she gets voted in the office for like 4 years. And it's like,
sense. Like, why would you call her queen? Why'd you call her president or prime minister or something like that? I mean, it's like, what? Why is she queen?
I don't know. Maybe it has something to do with, like,
it sounds more feminine.
Ancient dynasties or something like that. Like, remember the pharaoh?
Too bad they didn't bind her feet.
Was the pharaoh who was technically in charge of Egypt, but Queen Nefertiti was actually running the shit.
Yeah.
And he was only, like, what, 4 when he first started out?
Yeah, but that's usually because the king, pharaoh, or whoever is just too young. They don't have the mental capability.
True. So it's almost like a regency. But it does seem like Naboo is set up as a matriarchal society as opposed to a patriarchal society.
Because in Attack of the Clones, we also see a queen. So,
right.
Yeah, and if they're elected, and they're elected at a really young age, it's got to be some kind of science fair or some kind of like political science class where they just made the best grade.
It's just a dumb idea. I don't know.
Every single person in that thing is old enough to be her like grandfather.
Yeah.
Come sit on my knee, little girl.
Yeah.
Let's be honest. We now live in the world of Game of Thrones, okay? So having children running this shit does not sound impressive to me at all anymore, because we've all seen little Aaron boy there, and we've all seen Joffrey.
Right, exactly.
All right, we've all seen Robin Aaron. I want to make the tiny man fly.
I want to suck on my mother's teat.
Exactly, that's right. And we've all seen Joffrey.
Yeah.
Although Lyanna Mormont is freaking badass.
Okay, yes, you can use her as a counterpoint, because she's harsh. She is harsh, yes.
She is badass.
More of that, less of everything else, yes.
Well, like I've alluded before on our show, is Joffrey is just one of those people that you just viscerally hate. Hate him so much, and by the time he finally dies, sorry, spoilers if you haven't seen it.
Okay. No, Game of Thrones, there's no spoilers. Everyone will die that you care about or don't care about. They will all die, so just, it's not a spoiler. If you see someone in the show, they've got a very good chance of dying. Spoilers are over. Don't care. Stop complaining about spoilers. They don't exist.
Talking about bad mothers, can we talk about Shmi?
Oh, God.
To do the pod racing? I mean, like...
Oh, it's dangerous, Annie. I don't think you should do that.
I mean, like, what the hell? Like, I don't know in what world a mom would be like, yeah, you know, he's good, but, you know, it's extremely dangerous, and you could die in a fiery wreck.
Well, they're both slaves, so technically she doesn't have as much say as the slave owner, so...
But he elects to do it himself.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, that whole there was no father, you know, the whole Immaculate Conception thing, that'll take us into the midichlorians here in just a second, but... I just want to touch on that for a second, because I don't fucking buy it. Okay, even if we want to explain things away biologically speaking, which pisses me off, because the Force should be about faith and magic, but I'll touch on that in a second. There was no father? No. That that is just so lazy, and that's just so hand-wavy about Anakin's supposed to be the supposed chosen one. No, at least give some sort of terrible answer.
No
like
one
Cosby
ever
shows up in the background.
No one ever educated Shmi about roofies.
Yeah, exactly. Like, just have Cosby walking around in the background handing people glasses
Jello
of water
shots
or something like that. He's like, don't do this. How are you doing? She hears the pudding pop.
Robbie, I'm glad you brought this up. I've got this excellent idea. And I wanted to tell somebody about this, and I might as well bring it out here.
Right on.
I think we should take all the Cosby shows, strip all the audio out, put it on YouTube, and just have people talk over and have somebody do the Cosby voice and make it be the most rapey.
You know, Theo, you know, the way to a woman's heart is through Jello Pops with roofie in it.
Guys, is dual trademarking a thing? Like, can I be like, trademark Synthaholics, also trademark Artful Gremlins? Can that be like a thing?
Because Artful Gremlins is
sharing the trademark?
I think that's something somebody has to do, because I think this...
Agreed.
I think it should be a joint project between Artful Gremlins and Synthaholics.
I'm down.
I think this would blow up on the internet so bad, either we'd be put in jail or lauded as geniuses.
Or both. We could be like the Nelson Mandela of Cosby shows.
Maybe.
I don't want to be called the Nelson Mandela of Cosby shows.
But you won't turn it down either.
But you know what? I'll take one for the team.
Well,
those are two names that shouldn't cross paths.
No, they shouldn't.
Speaking of the supposed...
One's a bit rapey and one's a bit rapey.
A little bit of rape here and a little bit of rape there. Well, speaking of the Immaculate Conception, this brings up more Star Wars theories. But in Revenge of the Sith, Palpatine tells Anakin that his master was able, well, that Darth Plagueis was able to create life by using the Force. So, I mean, that kind of right there hints that maybe Palpatine created Anakin.
Or Plagueis.
Or yes. Snoke. Or Jar Jar.
A couple of these might actually even end up being the same person.
Or Watto.
Yeah. Fucking Togetherians.
Maybe Watto just went down on her with his flaccid nose thing, and then we didn't have sex. That's fine. Like, I didn't. There's no father.
It's like, Watto, did we have sex?
No, we did not.
I was just kind of hungry. I was just kind of hungry.
And Jar Jar's supposed to be racist. Come on.
Yeah. No, it's not.
I'm a Nubian. That doesn't work on the only money. Not the voice I specialized in.
Dude, seriously, it sounded like Mario with throat cancer. Come on, man. And Jar Jar is supposed to be racist.
It's me, Mario. It's me, Mario.
All right, so throat cancer and constipation. My bad.
Right. Pretty bad.
Oh, terrible.
It
awful.
Is. But I think they're going to fix the Anakin thing in the next movie, I think.
Re-release?
In the next re-release.
Where we get even more CG crap?
Well, maybe in episode 8 they'll address it, because there's been supposed quote-unquote leaks that Darth Plagueis... No, that Snoke says he is... Luke's grandfather that he created, that Anakin,
you know what,
Force,
I have seen said leaks. To be very honest with you, I put zero stock in any of the leaks coming out of Disney right now, because I read about four of them accidentally, mind you. Yes, and I do actually mean accidentally read them for episode 7. Not one of them were accurate, and all of them were supposedly direct from sources, direct from screenplays and everything. None of them were even close to the plot.
That's true.
So, as interesting as I find them, I almost tack it up to things that might be alluded to or things that won't be in there.
Yeah.
So at this point, if I read it, I'm far more certain that it's not going to be there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we'll see what happens. I would like.
Oh, yeah.
I would like for them to fix the Immaculate Conception thing, because that doesn't even make
sense. I would
sense.
Too. Because, and...
So
you
tell
think
us
this
your
is
rants
an,
about midichlorians that you've been alluding
okay.
to the entire time.
All right, so here, that's what I was about to ask. I'm like, is this an appropriate time? Can I get into midichlorians here?
You can rant away, my friend.
All right, so here's my
And remember,
my
we all love Star Wars.
I love Star Wars so much. You know, watching 4, watching 5, watching 6, you're hearing about the Force as this powerful, and I realize the sexual connotations, we live in 2016, so you know what? We're all going to power through this. So, anyway, you're hearing about the Force as this powerful, powerful entity that surrounds us and penetrates us, yes, I said it, and binds the universe together.
Like a Cosby.
You know, like a Cosby, that's right. It surrounds us, penetrates us, and slips you a pudding pop. So
that's what he said.
That's the Force is Cosby.
Oh. Darth Cos.
Oh my God.
So, you know, you're seeing Force ghosts of Obi-Wan. You're seeing Force ghosts of Anakin, and then a different version of Anakin, which made no sense. And,
he got younger.
Yoda. He got younger. It makes no sense. And, you know, the abilities that Yoda is able to teach Luke. And then you get to the prequels. And then they take this powerful religion, this spiritual awakening, this act that people dedicate their lives to, the practices to, their mental capacities to, and you science it away with midi fucking chlorians. Oh, he has a higher midi chlorian count than Master Yoda. He has this midi chlorian count, so obviously he can be a Jedi. Really? You're trying to science this shit away? It dilutes the religion. It turns it into something akin to almost Scientology to a degree. You know, even Scientology has more faith than what they ended up giving the Force with these fucking trilogies with the midichlorians. It dilutes the Force entirely.
Star Wars has never ever tried to explain anything ever, and the one time they tried to explain anything with science, it was the worst thing they could have tried to explain.
Exactly. Well, exactly.
I mean, and they make it to akin to like the bacteria that you have in your intestines or something like that. You know, it's like
precisely.
I mean, so is there like an aphidosilus for the midichlorians? Like, man, I'm low on midichlorians today. Yeah. Let me take some bacteria pills.
Yeah.
I mean, dude, seriously, the way they try to explain this away, the plot of the video game Parasite Eve with the the mitochondria theory actually makes more sense in the real world than the midichlorians do in Star Wars, okay? Please understand, with this statement, I'm not trying to diss on Star Trek whatsoever, but keep your genetics in Trek and your Force and magic in Wars, okay? Seriously, because the way you explain midichlorians does not fucking work. It does not fucking work at all. And all it does is dilute it. You're trying to say that Anakin was born of immaculate conception because the midichlorians inside Shmi actually gave birth to a being of pure midichlorian. No. No, 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 no. Now you're trying to rip off Akira. And you know what? The Japanese did a terrible job of ripping off Akira when they tried to make it live action, and that failed.
Right, right. No, and it doesn't even make sense. Like, the Immaculate Conception doesn't make sense, because even if it was midichlorians, it's just like, how do they fill in the rest of the genome to actually make a person? Secondly, with all that, is that midichlorians, just because you have them, what does it I mean, you can lift objects, or you can, you know, make crazy flips. I mean, that doesn't... What are they?
It doesn't magic? Work. I mean,
yeah, I don't know. And, like, he could have... Like, the exchange between Anakin and Qui-Gon, when he gives him that little test, you know, he could have just, like, had something that he sat there and, like, you know, did a meditation with him, and you could see how strong he was, or something like that. He didn't have to actually... take his blood and go, oh, you're a super Jedi, you know, kind of thing.
Dude, seriously, the way they went about doing that stuff, I'm surprised he didn't give him an enema.
That would have been interesting. I wonder how they had shown that.
Sorry, guys, more Cosby jokes.
Yeah.
Oh,
or
man.
Maybe you have that medical droid that would be doing that for him.
That's right. That's right.
In the back.
Anakin, bend over and cough.
And to take the midichlorians one step further, now you're introduced to the Jedi Order with a lot of really cool looking and really cool acting Jedi. Okay, I'm sorry. I love Mace Windu. I thought he was awesome. However, then you're starting to learn more about their inner workings and their teachings and credos and men. It makes no sense on that side either, because the Jedi are not supposed to love. Doesn't that nerf basically everything that Luke was being taught in the original movies? Anakin is too old to teach because he's like 9 years old, so anger has already been able to infect his soul. Really? Really? None of this makes any sense. It becomes way too exclusionary and, frankly, a bit rapey and pedophile-y, in my opinion. Now, I realize that they're trying to, you know, base the order around, like, the Shaolin monks or, you know, even Catholic priesthood. However, both orders have many, many issues and many, many problems. And the Shaolin monks do not take people or take young children when they're, like, 2 years old. No, you have to work yourself into becoming in a part of that order. So even if you were trying to use those parallels, which George obviously was trying to do, there are still plenty of problems there. So why are you doing it that way? So, yeah, I don't know.
It's the thing over and over again is that you got all these great ideas, you have a great world that's built, but like all the pieces just don't fit together. And why wasn't anybody sitting there and giving him? I mean, honestly, and I've said this before, I mean, George Lucas, Gene Roddenberry, they just surround themselves with yes men that couldn't tell them no.
Right.
And they really needed it. It's like I always say, like, it's like Paul McCartney, you know, wrote all these amazing songs, and then, you know, now that he doesn't have anybody to tell him, like a John Lennon, to tell him that's a bullshit song, you can't actually release that. He just releases these garbage songs, and there's nothing interesting about them anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think the more establishment you become, nobody's going to say, you know, you need to rethink that, you know?
Exactly. Exactly. That is another reason why I'm so happy about this renaissance that we're having now, from episode 7 to Rogue One to episode 8, you know, even beyond, because now we're a part of a generation that grew up watching this and grew up as a fan of this. And now we have the keyboards. Now we have control of the director's chair.
Yeah.
You know, right. Now we can start to right the wrongs that have been set about by Darth Lucas. You know?
It's like the first line of episode 7. We can now start to right the wrongs of the past.
Exactly. Like, wow. Exactly.
I don't actually demonize Lucas for everything. I just think he never followed through being a director and storyteller as long as he stepped away for too long. He ran the business and he never really sat behind the camera and developed stories. I think he lost that art, you know.
I don't necessarily think he lost it. I think he got lazy and complacent, and I think he got way too far into his own head. Is what I think. I think he got too far into his own head.
Well, that's what I mean. He just got he walked away from it from all these years after he did New Hope. He, you know, let's even Empire. He was kind of detached itself, other than the main plot and what was happening.
Right.
I don't know. I just think he never did anything in between that. I mean, he never did a movie, like, you know, like, even a small project, say, I'm not going to do a Star Wars project. Like, he even said, Lucas said, I'm going to work on smaller movies now that I'm not doing this. Well, where are those smaller movies?
Red Tails.
Exactly.
He did Red Tails, and I guess that was kind of like panned as a bad movie as well. I didn't see it, but.
Yeah, me neither.
I didn't either.
Interesting fact. Did you guys know that on the short list for director for Return of the Jedi, David Lynch?
Oh, ooh. Wow.
That would have been awesome.
Dude, from Dune, Twin Peaks.
I'm a gigantic David Lynch fan.
Dude, I'm so happy to talk to you then.
Yes, I am a giant, giant David Lynch fan. I love Dune. I love Twin Peaks. I love all that stuff. Return of Jedi might have been a little too surreal.
I agree. I agree with you. Are you excited for next summer, though?
Oh, Twin Peaks.
Dude.
Well, okay. I'm just going to say this, Robbie. I'm excited and also nervous. Just
me too.
What might happen. So.
Me too. I mean, Michael J. Anderson is not on the cast list. Mm-hmm. So.
Exactly. Right, right.
I don't know how I feel about the little men from another place not being on there. I'm just saying it.
Yeah, but... So. All that being said, I don't, you know, maybe they'll take it to place or different things, so who knows.
Right. I mean, dude, like, the other half of Hollywood is all on this cast list, so.
Yeah. Well, yeah, all David Lynch stuff is like that. Everyone signs up and they'll do anything.
Mm-hmm. Dude, friggin' Amanda Seyfried is on this list.
I'm
blown away by the amount of people that are signed up to do this show. I'm blown away. But this is way off topic. I'm so sorry.
Yeah. We'll have to do a Twin Peaks, different podcast.
Trekkies Walk With Me. I love it.
Yeah, I love that. Great idea. Which I still, we're still off topic, but
when were we on topic?
Yeah, I know. If we,
oh, dude, we've had so many rabbit holes.
Synthaholics, so we should be called rabbit holics, or rabbit hole holics, or something like
Fire,
that. Because
Fire Walk With Me, I still believe, is one of the scariest movies ever made.
I agree, especially that scene with David Bowie where he gets off the elevator.
It's terrifying. You don't know why you're scared either.
Exactly. When the kid's got flipping the mask too. You know, first you see him, and then you see the monkey underneath, and then you're hearing David Bowie's little voiceover. I found something. I was at the meeting place.
Yep, yep.
Who do you think that is there? And I'm just convinced that it's not actually that it's actually Bob that's taken over Cooper's body at that point. That they're speaking with someone else.
And your blood goes cold watching.
It does.
Your blood goes cold.
Oh my God. What's very interesting, my wife actually got me the Blu-ray set, which has Fire Walk With Me on it, and all of the deleted scenes.
Oh, wow.
If you watch the deleted scenes in order, it's actually a second movie that was made right along with it. They cut an entire second movie that actually makes slightly more sense than the original Fire Walk With Me.
Huh.
Along with that. And it follows The Ring a little bit closer, too. So you find out a little bit more about that. And you find out the ultimate fate of Annie.
7 days.
Really?
Well, not the ultimate fate, but you do see Annie again. So it actually ends, instead of ending where it did, it ends at the end of the season. Rather, the series.
I just want to find out what happened to Chris Isaac's character. He just disappears.
Chris Isaac's character. Which one was Chris Isaac?
The FBI agent that's with Keith or something.
Oh, yeah.
I forgot.
I have no idea.
He just disappears.
Yep. That was a really weird scene, too. This girl is my mother's sister. Okay, cool. I'm like, okay.
Fine. Yeah.
That's great. Anyways, we've lost probably everybody.
If you guys haven't seen Twin Peaks, you must rectify this situation. Watch a little bit of Twin Peaks.
Yeah, yeah.
It's well worth it.
You know what's funny, though? Just going on to Twin Peaks and Star Wars here. It's
right.
Because I try to introduce some... I know I try to introduce Dave to Twin Peaks, and I try to introduce other younger people to Twin Peaks, and a lot of people are turned off by, I think... I got to season two.
I just never finished watching it.
Yeah, but the time period of it.
The camp, like, you know, and the cheese.
Yeah. A lot of people are like, I just don't get it, you know? And I think the same thing when I've talked to younger people who grew up more with episode one and the prequels, and then they go to episode four, and they're just like, what the fuck is this? Like the one friend that...
It's not action schlock.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I said, wait a second. You're saying that Episode 1 is better than Episode 4? I'm like, are you out of your mind? And like, Episode 4 starts off with two droids just wandering the robots for 20 minutes. Why am I interested in that? And I'm like, okay, like, maybe it doesn't have the pacing that you're used to. But
right.
The story is far better than
That's the thing. It's
far better. The characters are more compelling. The story is more concise.
I know. It's a different generation. That's all I'm coming down to.
But the thing is, like, the younger generation, like, I try to get people to, like, tell me why the prequels are better than the episode 4, 5, and 6. And like, the only answer I can think of that they really give me is it's got more action in it. Then I'm like, what? Right. Action doesn't make a movie.
Yeah.
There's movies that almost have no action in it that are fantastic. I mean, like, mm-hmm.
There's another thing is going to The Simpsons is I read some article of why people like it, and they took they interviewed a ton of people and took surveys and a poll, and it wasn't the humor that people liked it the most. It came down to it was brightly colored.
Yeah, I can see that.
And it's like, so that's why you're watching The Simpsons? I mean, back in the 90s, The Simpsons comedy was like probably the best that was ever put out at that.
Oh, dude, it was on point.
Yeah.
It was absolutely on point. Even the Treehouse of Terror episodes, I mean, you don't get better than the original ones.
Yeah, they're
especially
amazing.
The first six or seven.
Yeah, absolutely. So, just that being said, I think a lot of people, that's all it comes down to. You know, it's like, yeah, you like episode one because it's more like there's
shiny.
More, yeah, it's more flashy, it's more, you know, jump around action, but their story is non-existent.
Well, I mean, George right. Lucas even said in the commentary of episode one that I try to make these movies like silent movies, and I'm trying to tell a visual story, which is why I'm using all these special effects. I gotta put them in so it'll tell you a story just by watching it. And I'm just like, no. Like,
it doesn't do anything for me either way. I mean, I don't care if it has special effects or if it doesn't.
Yeah.
That doesn't make anything. I mean, I can watch Pan's Labyrinth and be completely blown away with the whole story and the special effects. It doesn't, it's the story's there. That's the problem. I mean, that's the good thing. It's like the problem here is that there is no compelling story. It's just a sequence of events that don't mean anything to me. So,
I mean,
other than Anakin is Darth Vader at some point. That's all I care.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, I mean, like, I think Fight Club's probably like one of my favorite movies of all time. And, I mean, I guess if you count fist fights as action, I mean,
yeah,
like...
Yeah, that movie has a lot of action.
But yeah, I mean, but is it action? Is fist fights action? Like, you know, where you're talking about like
there's action, but it's more high drama.
It is high drama. It's lots of conversation. It's lots of like, you know, how does the mind work? Type of
compelling conversation too. Things that make you think further than what you would normally think.
Yeah, I wouldn't consider Fight Club an action movie. I say it's a drama. I mean, yeah, there's fighting.
Oh no,
I
agree with that.
I mean, like,
I was just saying that there was action in it. It's definitely a drama.
Well, but I mean, like, you know, put it next to Star Wars, where, you know, the kids say, "Oh, there's like all this action in Star Wars," and there is. I mean, there's action most of the scenes, unless they're talking about politics, there's almost no action. But there's like weird things flying around in the background all the time because it's George Lucas got to put everything digital everywhere and every time. And Fight Club, on the other hand, is, you know, very dialogue heavy, but it's. There is some action with the fighting, and there's like one explosion at the end of the movie. Spoilers, but I mean, it's not action oriented, and it's way more entertaining and well more written than episode 1, 2, or 3.
Mm-hmm. No, yeah, well, no doubt. I mean, the only thing is, Fight Club's an amazing movie. So that's no, there's no contest there. But yeah, that's the problem with Phantom Menace. Is just George Lucas did an awesome job at world building. He had a lot of big ideas that were great. But when it came down to dinners and being compelling, like I said, if you could get a guy like J.J. Abrams to come in and punch that script up and make you actually care about the characters,
as long as guns held to his head, where there's don't do stupid mystery stuff.
Right.
Right. Right. Right. But, yeah, so anyways, I guess there's no real fixing Phantom Menace, no matter what.
I mean, like, the only way Phantom Menace could have been fixed, to me, is if this theory is true, which I believe it is, and if they followed through with it in episode 2 and 3. Because if they would have followed through, episode 1 could have been forgivable. It's like, wow, Jar Jar was stupid. I hated Jar Jar, even though I spent hours and hours perfecting doing his voice. It was not great.
It would explain away things.
It would give it
an excuse.
In context, episode 1 would have been much better in context with 2 and 3 had he followed through with what I believe was the original thing. Plot for Jar Jar. Like, episode 1 still would not be a great movie, but with 2 and 3 like filling in the puzzle pieces like as to why he was that way. I mean, because to go back to Star Trek, since we are a Star Trek podcast, it's like Julian Bashir. I hated him. Could not stand Julian. He's the Jar Jar of Deep Space Nine. He was a bumbling idiot in the first couple seasons, and he was hitting on every girl. And then he becomes, to me, probably the most fleshed out, most interesting character in Deep Space Nine. He's got so much depth and backstory, and like, he was acting the fool because he was genetically engineered. And he didn't want to play off how perfect he was.
Right, no. But it's still, I mean, in the end, even if the Jar Jar's thing was real and they went through with it, I think still Phantom Menace would be just a hot mess. So that's all I got to say.
I still agree it would be a hot mess, but I think in the context, it would be not as bad. Because Julian Bashir, like, I love him now after seeing the entire series. Sure. At the beginning, I hated him. Like Jar Jar. You hate Jar Jar at the beginning, but if they would have fixed him and made him like this really badass, like, overseer character, like, pulling the strings, even Palpatine strings, that would have been an amazing transformation in the character. And that would have made, as big a hot mess as episode 1 would be, it would still, I just believe in context, it would make it less bad. Because that's how I'm viewing Episode 7. Episode 7, to me, is okay. It's pretty good. It was a fun movie. It was entertaining. But in context with Episode 8 and 9, I am going to judge it harshly if 8 and 9 are carbon copies of Empire and Return. Like, but if they're different, then Episode 7 will be even better than I think it is now, because it was a great, brilliant new jumping off point. So, I mean, in context, the first movies in the trilogies are defined by the follow-ups.
To me. That's true. That's true.
Well, we'll find out.
You know, right on.
For Episode 8. But anyways, very interesting. A lot of fun talking about all this.
Yeah.
I like the conspiracy theory with Jar Jar. I don't know if I agree with it completely, but it's a nice idea. Makes Phantom Menace a little more palatable, but in the end,
it's still not.
It still gets a F on my
on your movie scale.
Mm-hmm. I'm gonna give it a D+ just because of the theory.
It bumped up.
It bumped it up from an F.
I will give it a D+. No, I'll give it an F+. So, you know.
But no, I appreciate you guys having me on to discuss this. This was a lot of fun.
Thank you for coming on. Tell us about how we can find you on social media and find your podcasts.
Oh, yeah. You guys can find me, Artful Gremlin, at Artful Gremlin on Twitter and Instagram. You can find my podcasts, The Nerdy Nomicon, anywhere you listen to podcasts. That's Google Play, Stitcher, iTunes. Nerdy Nomicon, spelled with a Y, mind you. .libsyn.com. You can find the other podcast I do with my friends Hobart and Dickie. It's called Couldn't Be Models. You can find that at all the same places.
And I was on Episode 8. There was an episode called Schisms.
You were. And actually, you've got a cameo coming up on Nerdy Nomicon as well.
Ooh, cameo.
Yes, you do. So yeah, you've been on both of them, man. You've made the rounds.
Awesome. Well, I hope to make the rounds. And hopefully Aaron and I can both make the rounds on your show so that we can continue the fun.
Absolutely, man. I'd love to have you both back on.
Awesome.
Thanks, Robbie. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. It was great having you. Great having you.
Thanks for having me.
Interesting discussion. This is very different than how we've done episodes before, so I'm really, really happy that this worked out.
Well, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on, guys.
All right. You have a great night.
You too. Bye.
Bye. All our music is provided by Warp 11. You can find them at warp11.com or Warp 11 on Twitter. You can find us at Synthaholic Duo, and me at David_J_Duncan. Where can they find you?
Find me at Blackbird 2004. Tweet me.
Greet me. Tweet me, you Tweet will. Me. You can find Faith at Faith Hertzberg. You can find Guy Davis at GS Davis Art and USS Tamerlan and Witches of Flames, I believe, that should have been coming out or has come out. You can rate us on iTunes, because we love ratings, we love stars, and we love reviews. That'll get us higher in the charts so more people will find the show. Please go ahead and do that. Also, if you don't feel like writing, but you do have some money laying around, you can donate to us or to our Patreons. We've got Synthaholics.com/Patreon if you want to donate to the show and get bonus episodes. And if you are a fan of the arts and want to follow Guy's work, you can check out his Patreon at patreon.com/GSDavisArt.
Yeah, and as we always say, tell a friend. Get somebody else that might like sci-fi, like Star Trek, like weird stuff, like bad humor. Let them know about us.
Butt jokes.
Cosby Jello Pudding Pops, if you have anybody who likes Jello Pudding Pops.
Yeah. Knock on a neighbor's door. Tell them the good news of this is a podcast that makes you laugh. Tell them why it makes you laugh. And share the awesomeness that is us, or the mediocre, however you view us, however you have to
tell the person at the door why you're rummaging through their trash.
Like, Synthaholic sent us, and you will do the same thing once you start listening to us. So just tell them that good news, and that they'll soon be rummaging through trash just to tell people about how amazing the show is.
Our listeners love to rummage through trash.
it's their probably main hobby. You know, you gotta put the earbuds in, you listen to the podcast, you jog, and then you just start rummaging through trash.
It's my hobby. Are we insinuating our listeners are homeless people?
No, it's just when they go for their jog, when they're listening to the podcast, or
All right.
I don't know. You're the one who said digging through trash. I just said they were going to the people's house, and then I just kind of ran with the going to digging through trash.
I don't know.
Maybe they found the Phantom Menace there, and they have to, like, bury it. Bury it deep, deep in the trash.
I found the Phantom Menace.
No! It's a horrible thing. But thank you all so much for bearing with us on our new format, doing new things. Yeah, strange new worlds.
Any ideas of any other topics you want us to talk about, sci-fis or any interesting things in your world?
Yeah, if you want to hear us do weird takes on you know, your favorite science fiction things and hear us butcher it, we will be glad to do that, you know, as we have time. Like I said, this is going to be a once-a-month thing, so basically 12 non-Star Trek episodes a year, unless we happen to find something we really want to do on top of that, so... let us know what you think. If you want to keep doing this, or if you want to stay with Star Trek, we also want to hear that. But I mean, we'll see how the consensus is and how we will continue. Well, again, thank you all so much for listening. Live long and prosper, guys. And we'll both shit our pants. You're the best drinking friend I ever
had. Yeah, I think the way we got around to that one is we asked if there were any, like, horror episodes or if they dealt with ghosts at all in Star Trek, and that was the episode.
That was my go-to. Like, it's, like, the only, like, really kind of scary. I mean, Devil in the Dark sort of scary, but it's not, like...
Devil in the Dark is kind of scary.
And it's shot like a horror film, but it's not, like...
Yeah, and then what's the one with Beverly Crusher gets the sexy Scottish ghost? I forgot that one, but that's a ghost.
Sub Rosa, I think.
Yeah, it's the ghost story, but it's not really scary.
It's really dumb.
it's like a bad erotica novel. Or no, it's really bad. It's got interesting points, but it's not good.